In the name of the risen Lord, amen. So this is subjective, but I wonder what of the television shows you have watched in your lifetime that had a pitch-perfect ending. I remember as a child when the show Cheers came to an end, and my parents rejoiced that Sam and Diane got together. What an incredible, perfect landing. The Gospel of John that we normally hear proclaimed today lands the plane in the same way, and people prefer the Gospel of John for the drama of the story. Mary Magdalene mistakes Jesus for a gardener, then Jesus just speaks her name and she clings to him in recognition, and then impulsive Peter's running about here and there, and the beloved John peeks into the empty tomb. But today's gospel, the Gospel of Mark, ends like this. So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. This is definitely not the popular version of the ending to the story. It's kind of more like the ending to Seinfeld. Or some of you might know that show How I Met Your Mother. Ultimate disappointment. Today we have none of the exciting drama and pitch-perfect ending. Instead we have these three women. Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome. They're headed to the tomb to tend to Christ's body. They dedicated themselves to following Jesus, and this is where it now led them to the grave, where they were going to dress his body for burial. Now, this resurrection story is disconcerting. We don't get to see the risen Jesus. Peter and the other disciples are just absent. Instead, there's a strange young man dressed in white waiting there to tell Mary and her friends that Jesus has been raised from the dead. It's like they came only to find Jesus' personal assistant saying, "Sorry you missed him. He's headed back to Galilee to keep working." They aren't overwhelmed with joy. There is no pronouncement of belief. The only transformation is one of alarm, because this is in no way what they thought they would encounter. But there was something so compelling about this ending to the story that it was the very first resurrection story to be written down. There also might be why there are more that came out later. What next? We're left in this moment that captures the fear and silence that accompanies a moment of decision yet unresolved. The dean of Columbia Theological Seminary in Georgia recalls this story. On a frosty Sunday morning in the fall of 1964, two white college students waited nervously on the edge of their Memphis, Tennessee campus, anticipating the arrival of an African-American student from elsewhere in the city to meet them. On the day before, an interracial group had participated in nonviolence training, a workshop led by the Reverend James Lawson. And from that meeting had come a series of plans for interracial groups of students to attend worship in a white congregation unannounced and probably unwelcome. In some small way, it represented a youthful intention to take the cost of discipleship with new seriousness. It was amid the justice challenges of the civil rights movement. Some of you know what 1964 was like right here. For reasons unknown, the African-American student never made it to the rendezvous point. To be sure, for that student, the cost of discipleship was much higher than those of the two white students. But what is known about what happened in this story is the almost shameful relief the two white students felt as it became clear that they could refocus their plans and they could attend worship somewhere else that day without risk. One can only ponder and imagine the fear they might have felt just as they departed for the safer worship experience. Had maybe they lived in the era of cell phones. They didn't. But what if they'd received a call from that young colleague? And that colleague had been waiting for them on the steps of the sanctuary in which they had agreed to enter worship together. In Mark's resurrection story, as well as the story of these young activists, there is a tension. Is the message of God's present and powerful reign in the world trustworthy? Are we ready, more ready, to make peace with the death of good news than to enter into its promise? What if the stakes were high for us, and we knew we were called to do something? Our conscience called us to it, and we suddenly found ourselves relieved of the burden of that call. Would we move on with our lives, metaphorically go on to the safe church? Or would we still seek to follow the way that had been revealed to us? This quickly becomes personal. If you've been around for the season of Lent at Calvary, you know we've been talking about vocation and social conscience. We've been asking, what does it mean to identify and follow a calling from God? John Niefsee writes, quote, "We have a choice about whether to say yes or no to calls. The stakes are high, and there are risks and consequences either way we go. If we do what we love, there are no guarantees that money will follow, that things will work out according to plan, that we won't get hurt, or that we won't come to the realization down the road that our choice was a mistake. On the other hand," Niefsee writes, "if we play it safe and we say no to calls, we also open ourselves up to emotional and spiritual risks," end quote. This is the place where the gospel meets us today, at the crossroads, where we can make a decision to follow in the way of Jesus or not. And those crossroads, when we face ourselves at them, can be surprising, stunning, and terrifying. It could be as monumental as a major life decision, or as simple as a decision about whether or not we show up or keep looking for the one for whom we are to show up. It could be as simple as whether or not to send that email or make that phone call. When it comes to following Jesus, he will almost certainly call you to follow in a way that is different than what you would plan or come up with on your own, the ending you would write. Here's the good news today. in the least popular and definitely the most enigmatic of all the resurrection stories we hear on Easter days. As we confront the puzzlement of the empty tomb, we also hear the promise that Jesus is on ahead of us, waiting for us to follow along and join him. We can trust that Easter will take root in us as gradually as the seeds that break to life in the darkness of the soil. Anyone who gardens or who pays attention to the ground around them in the late winter knows this truth. The process of transformation is happening, but it's so often hidden before our eyes. What initially looks like emptiness and fear could actually be the process of transformation at work in our hearts and our lives. We can trust that promise. We don't have to run to meet it. We can just let it take root and trust that it will eventually bloom. This is what those three women encountered at the grave. Not the body of Jesus, not even the risen Christ, but a promise. And whether we like how this story is unfolding or not, we are given in the midst of it this promise that all that has been devastated will be restored, even if we can't see it or understand it yet. Christ is risen. The grave is empty. Love is eternal. And death's defeat is certain. Nothing will be lost. And whether you can deal with this version of the story, this truth right now, doesn't matter. Christ has given it to you. It has given it to me. It has given it to us. It is ours. We're invited to say yes to a hope that will not leave us and cannot be taken away. This is the promise of the risen Christ. The promise that calls us to the empty tomb and to follow beyond the empty tomb. Amen.